Going around with a pack down in the south of France,
yeah,
and they had me out on the veranda, and it was this, and we'd have to stop every now and again because a moped would come by delivering pizza, right? Yeah, I'm running with. Oh, stop!
Give me silver, blue, and gold—the color of the sky I'm told.
The thing about a supergroup, you know, it's a double-edged sword because, yeah, it opens a lot of doors and people want to interview you if you're from three well-known bands, but ultimately it's down to you or the band to deliver the goods. But we did deliver.
Band, it's all about the people as much as the talent, I think. You've got to really get on with each other for the magic to work, you know.
This is Simon Kirk of Bad Company.
This is Mick Ralph of Bad Company.
This is Paul Rogers of Bad Company in the studio with Redbeard celebrating 40 years. Part 2.
Last episode, we learned that all of the members of Bad Company agreed that being the first band signed to Led Zeppelin's Swan Song label, as well as sharing management with legendary Zeppelin manager Peter Grant, was advantageous in the immediate popularity of Bad Company's debut album in 1974, as well as the follow-up, 1975's Straight Shooter. With lead singer-songwriter Paul Rogers and drummer Simon Kirk both graduated from the British blues rock band Free, guitarist-songwriter Mick Ralphs, ex-Mott the Hoople, and bass player Boz Burrell on sabbatical from a stint with King Crimson, the expectations for this so-called supergroup were exceedingly high, according to first Simon Kirk, followed by Mick Ralphs and Paul Rogers.
The thing about a supergroup, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Because, yeah, it opens a lot of doors and people want to interview you if you're from three well-known bands. But ultimately, it's down to you or the band to deliver the goods. You know, I mean, Blind Faith didn't do it. No, they released one dubious album. They didn't tour very well. They only did one tour. Crosby, Stills and Nash, yeah, they knocked it out of the park. Ultimately, it's down to the music, and it opened doors, and the Zeppelin clout, sure, it certainly helped. But we did deliver. Bottom line is, we did deliver.
Yeah, it was up to us at the end of the day, and that was quite apparent when Peter became less and less available to manage us as time went on, because he was involved in Zeppelin and various other crises that came up. So we held our head up and carried on as long as we could. But it was a great association, and I think it did nothing but help us get to where we got.
Yeah, and I mean, we still see Robert and Jimmy. Jimmy comes to the shows. He was at Wembley, actually.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
And
still friends. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Good lads. Nice.
Good people.
See me above the dust.
Run With The Pack, utilizing orchestral strings on that ride out there, was the title song to Bad Company's 1976 third album, and like the first two, not recorded in a conventional recording studio. Matter of fact, on Bad Company's first album, Paul Rodgers had sung his actual vocal on the album and band's theme song, while Rodgers stood outside Headley Grange in a field under a full moon at midnight.
Yeah, I did what they call a pilot vocal. And when you do a pilot vocal, you put a sort of leather hat on and these glasses and stuff.
I remember one time a guy said to me, he said, I believe Paul did the vocal to Bad Company. I said he did it on the lawn with a full moon. And he said, oh, outside. I said, well, lawns usually are.
Outside, well, it was a lawn in the studio. This place had everything, man.
It's just we had to wait about a year for a full moon to get the atmosphere.
It was foolish.
Yeah, it was foolish. Yeah. No, it was...
Well, it
was a master stroke.
We did the track, and it did the pilot vocal, as they call it, you know, with the leather hat and all the things. And we set up the microphone and the headphones, I think. Is that about 100 yards of lead, actually, over fences and cow shit and all this stuff and everything. We set it up and then we waited till the evening, right? And then I clambered up there with a torch.
I remember,
and headphones.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
One, two, it was really strange. I was standing in this middle of this
field. We could hear the birds, the owls
and wind blowing and stuff like that.
It was great, actually. Poor Ron Nevison there.
Yeah.
And
they played the track, and when they played the track, it was very eerie just to hear the dang, dang, dang.
Especially in the night time.
It just was really eerie and very atmospheric. And at the end of it, there was a wind that just went across the microphone. There's a cool wind blowing, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. It was little things like that happened all the time with us.
Organic,
but magical.
Took all the things that I needed so bad. I'm standing here wondering, where is the love that I had? Oh, give me silver, blue and gold, the color of the sky and turn. Was mine. Now that it's gone, whoa, I'm crying. Oh, the time that it takes for a love to grow cold is a wonder to me. I'm walking around with my head hanging down. Tell me, where is she? Silver, blue, and gold.
Bad Company's 1976 third album, Run With The Pack, Silver, Blue, and Gold is a timeless beauty that helped the album be Bad Company's first million seller. But why go to such lengths as recording in country manors, castles, and a French chateau in order to create atmosphere? First, Bad Company's Paul Rodgers responds, then Mick Ralphs, followed by Simon Kirk.
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a good question. Basically, the answer to that would be that that is what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's what we try to do.
Yeah.
And whatever it takes, that's what we'll try and do. Yeah.
We strive to be a little bit different, but, you know, within the context of a thing like recording, try these things, you know, set the guitars up in front of a fireplace, you know, pulsing outside, whatever. Mm-hmm. Things that aren't norm, but just to try it. And it has its own sound, its own drawbacks, but it's, yeah. Why not? You know, give it a go.
It does have its problems sometimes. I remember when we were in France and we were doing Run With The Pack down in the south of France.
Yeah.
And they had me out on the veranda and it was just, and it, we'd have to stop every now and again because a moped would come by delivering pizza, right? Yeah. I'm running with. Oh, stop.
Do you remember Boz's arm was down in the boiler house and and the woman, Madam somebody, kept coming in to try and get the boiler fixed and Boz's amp was in there. He wasn't there, but his amp and microphone was. So we'd be playing away, you know, on doing the track.
Oh, right, the ghostly amp would just be working down there.
Yeah, and then you'd hear this woman arguing with a plumber. And she'd be doing
that. Over the bass track.
Over the bass track.
Take five.
Yeah, okay.
Madame.
But see, that's why, I mean, that's one of the reasons you go into a studio in the old days anyways, because you make it very clean and sort of that didn't happen. But what that meant for us was it got too clean and we couldn't even see each other and there wasn't any sort of the connection that we have live.
That's right.
That live thing is what it's all about, really.
Yeah.
So we really should be trying to recreate the live spirit in a studio environment so it's clean and you don't have mopeds and
oh, but even so, when we were doing it like that, we were always congregate wherever he was playing.
Right, long leads.
We could see him, long leads, and we had eye contact all the time. It was great. We did the first three albums like that, didn't we?
Yeah, in houses.
And then, no, the fourth was the chateau, so they're all kind of makeshift locations.
You down, girl, 'cause I didn't know where you'd been. You had all
next, you'll hear funny and fond memories of Bad Company original bass player Boz Burrell. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and lots more at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Bad Company's Paul Rogers, Mick Ralphs, and Simon Kirk.
This is Simon Kirk of Bad Company.
This is Mick Ralphs of Bad Company.
This is Paul Rogers of Bad Company in the studio with Redbeard.
Learning the key to my design.
title song to Bad Company's 1977 fourth album, Burning Sky. Paul Rogers of Bad Company tells us that rock and roll fantasies and inspirations for songs come from everywhere, including crazy Las Vegas cab drivers.
And I remember that night, actually, when we were in Vegas. Do you remember? Yeah, it was just one night on a tour. Yeah. And we jumped in the cab, and the cab driver goes, "Hey, there's been a shooting over at the Frontier Hotel."
That's right.
"Shall we go by?" And we all went, "No."
Yeah.
How does no sound? And he was on. He was going. He went there. Right?
Yeah.
And there was lights everywhere. All the it was cop all cars, pandemonium. 16 cop cars, lights flashing with the street lights and just everything. It was
high drama, wasn't it?
For us,
yeah.
You know,
it's not an everyday occurrence for people like us. But
I think Redbeard, in answer to the first part of your question, you know, the songs that for me, like riding a bike, as it were, are the songs that most people love to hear us play. You know, Can't Get Enough, Ready for Love.
The ones we've always done,
Feel
really.
Like Making Love, Shooting Stuff, Good Loving, Moving On, Rock and Roll Fantasy. They're the
He's
ones
just
that...
told you the whole set now.
Yeah.
just kidding.
Yeah, we're not that secretive.
No.
There's no stealth about us. No, but he's absolutely right. No, those songs, they still sound good. You know, although we played them a lot, we still enjoy playing them. Because we wouldn't play them if we didn't.
That's exactly right.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll Fantasy was the electrifying lead-off song to Bad Company's strong fifth album, Desolation Angels, in March 1979. Sadly, the man who played bass on every Bad Company studio album, Boz Burrell, passed away in 2006. All four original members last worked together in 1998, and Boz also played on Bad Company's 1999 tour. Remembering Boz,
Bad Company drummer Simon Kirk goes first.
Speaking quite frankly, he, you know, he imbibed and he indulged.
He had a good time.
In nefarious substances, Redbeard. He was a drinker and he drank a lot and smoked a lot. And unfortunately, he paid the price for it.
But well, he never looked...
He was never, you know, was never inebriated or anything like that on stage.
Never.
He was always very, very together. I mean, he's a great bass player.
Fantastic.
A really good guy. I mean, when the thing I liked about Boz, and you get to think about it on reflection, don't you, you know, when someone's passed, you remember all the great things about him. And he was a very melodic bass player, you know, very musical.
Taste, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, he would, it wasn't just dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum. It was like do-do-do-do.
It was very melodic, wasn't it?
Yeah, he would know, he would play lead sometimes and then drop down to lock with the bass drum and...
It was just a different take, wasn't it? He had a different approach, which
it was more,
that's what we liked about him, because we tried a lot of other bass players that were good.
Lord knows we tried.
He was the last on the list. We had a list of 16 bass players, and he was the last guy.
I wasn't even actually sure when you said, oh, well, we'll have Boz, come on.
We'll get him down. Well, he did a crafty, didn't he? We got him down to rehearsals. We were all, like, waiting to play something. So he said, well, what do you want to do? He said, I want to go to the pub. So we all went to the pub and got horribly drunk.
I think we bought it, actually. We took a checkbook and bought the pub.
Probably.
The check bounced all over the place, but we had free drinks, do you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it backing out the car park into the pub.
Yeah.
And then driving off, oh, dear.
Anyway, sorry. We came back and played a load of rubbish because we were all drunk. And then the next day, Paul says, what did you think? I said, I don't know. I was a bit drunk, I think. He said, so was I. And Paul says, but I think I offered him the job. I said, oh, well, never mind.
I liked him from the word go because...
He was such an endearing character.
I tell you, the very first song we did was Little Misfortune.
Yes,
it
was.
And it was in G, if I remember.
Yeah, it was.
And he said, just give me... And he said, well, it goes from G to F to C. He said, no, just give me the... I'll figure it out.
The gist of it.
Wow. And he did, you know. He really did figure it out. And it wasn't until later I found out he'd only been playing bass... less than a couple of years.
Yeah.
And the fact that he'd been with King Crimson, which, you know, I never really liked them. You know, I thought they had a great album cover, but that was about it. It didn't really endear, you know, in the court
of the
Crimson King.
Of the 70s,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
But when he wandered in, he was a great looking guy and he had a very laid back attitude and great smile. And
he
was very endearing.
He was great.
And through a haze of alcohol, he got even better.
He was the missing link, if you were.
City, what can I do? I'm falling in love. I'm just an old hound dog roaming around. Oh Lord, I got all this in heaven above. Whoa, Atlanta, hear me calling. I'm coming back to you one fine day. No need to worry, there ain't no hurry, 'cause I
I'm falling in love. I'm just an old hound dog roaming around. Oh, Lord, I got all this in heaven above. Whoa, light up.
The strong comeback in 1979 of Bad Company's Desolation Angels featured the toe-tapper Oh Atlanta. Bad Company guitarist Mick Ralphs continues the fond remembrances of original Bad Company bass player Boz Burrell.
With a band, it's all about the people as much as the talent, I think. Mm. You've got to really get on with each other for the magic to work, you know. And I've seen bands put together, you know, the so-called big names. It never really it doesn't has matter. Because it's all about the people. And if you've got great people you work with, you can make great, even greater music.
I tell you what, you could take Boz anywhere and there's always someone who knew him.
I know.
You could go to bloody Newcastle or Swindon, walking down the aisle, hello, Boz. Hello, Squire. Yeah. You all right?
No, we all think very, you know, think fondly of him and we all miss him, obviously. I hadn't seen Boz for a number of years when I heard the news that he'd passed.
Yeah, he was living out in Ibiza, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen him. I think the last time
it was 12 or 15 years since we've been in.
Long time.
We hadn't worked together for a long time, and then he got into his jazz. And then he moved to Edinburgh in Scotland and played with a soul band. And then he moved to Spain, I think, somewhere in Spain, for the climate because he was getting his joints off.
He always loved Ibiza, though, didn't he?
Yes,
he always used to go.
It was like the sun.
Yeah.
So probably when I got the call, it would have been 12 or 15 years prior to that I'd actually seen him and been with him. You know, people like that, you think they'll live forever.
1999.
Huh? The interesting thing was...
1999, yeah.
So but the interesting thing was that when he died, we hear that he was actually teaching someone a bass part.
He was actually playing the guitar.
Wasn't that amazing? And it was completely out of the blue.
He just fell off the stool with
and
the guitar
just slid
in his hands.
Down and that wasn't unusual.
No, that was what he would have done anyway.
You know, so in a way, he
fell off.
And he went out.
I don't think anybody thought he was. Yeah. He was serious. They thought he didn't get out.
He slid under the table.
Yeah, but he actually had a guitar in his hand. I remember because he was always trying to tell me how to play jazz, and I hated it because I didn't want to know.
Dweedly-doo.
He'd say this E flat seventh, Squire, with a flattened fifth, and all this. So I don't know what it is. I don't know what it sounds like. I don't want to know what
he
it is.
He did get a bit jazzy towards the end, dear old boss. So
but bless him.
Time forever. Bad Company live at Wembley 2010, paying tribute to their late bass player, Boz Burrell, with his Gone, 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 which first appeared on Desolation Angels. Still to come, the definitive answer on why Bad Company broke up. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, at Redbeard Rocks, and at InTheStudio.net on the web. I'm Redbeard with Paul Rogers, Mick Ralphs, and Simon Kirk. In the studio.
This is Simon Kirk of Bad Company.
This is Mick Ralphs of Bad Company.
This is Paul Rogers of Bad Company. In the studio with Redbeard.
Certainly a pleasure, gentlemen. The love and affection that Paul Rogers, Mick Ralphs, and Simon Kirk share for one another, as well as the timeless music they created as the original Bad Company, is so obvious that it begs the question, why did Bad Company ever stop? Paul Rogers reminded us that at the dawn of the 80s, rock bands were heading out into uncharted territory, and not everyone was coming back.
Did it all become a bit...
When Bonzo died, and I just felt we were flying too high.
Yeah.
Something had to give, and I just wanted to come off the road and...
I think if we hadn't stopped, something terrible might have happened to him.
Yeah, because we were out flying out there, weren't we, really?
Yeah.
It's like, oof.
I think Paul saw the red light before we did because we wanted to keep going. But in retrospect, yeah, we needed to just pull back and reflect on what we'd done. You know, when you're going along at that pace
with that amount of interest or money or accessibility, whatever you want to call it.
Becomes an industry
and you become part of it.
Itself. Yeah, it's a big
you start
turning.
Beating yourself up. You know,
not worth it.
No.
And I think, you know, by
so
the same
put
token,
the brakes on and thank God you did.
Getting back together, we know within half an hour if it's going to work. And it does work. And the times that we've reunited, it's worked.
But we get together now because we want to, not because, then it was like, well, okay, lads, come off a 3-month flat out tour, go and write some songs, do another album, then do another tour. It's like, I'm not complaining. We had a great time, but the pressure.
But there was times like Burning Sky when we turned up for that
songs.
Album.
Yeah,
yeah, we came right off the road, and then okay, lads, make another album, and it was really, really
you and
tough.
I going, well, what have you got? Have you
got
this?
We almost thought, well, we'll record what we've got, but we probably won't release it because we just don't have the energy to give it what we feel it
that's
needs.
That's right.
And
because up to that point, we always had a few songs in ready for the next record. Oh, I think it all just culminated around that time. The business can do that to you, and if you don't watch out, it'll crush you. Because that was another
it'll
band.
It'll just eat up your life, yeah. But I think it's good. I mean, looking back now, I can look back on it fondly, really, because there's some great memories, and we survived.
Yeah.
And we're still here, and we can still kick it out there, I think, fairly
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's very enjoyable these days.
misty morning. Valleys and mountains, oceans and seas,
Hammer of Love comes from the 1998 Anthology Sessions. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Paul Rogers, Mick Ralphs, and Simon Kirk. Special thanks to Chris Crawford. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2013, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and check out the biggest names in rock and roll at inthestudio.net.